to the Saturday morning fabulous KPCW film review panel. We haven't quite figured out the name yet, but it's the the post-Oscar show. It's early March. March is busting out all over, as you can see outside with the snow gently falling. And we have our fabulous Oscar panel here. We have Barbara Bretz, who I'm sure is keeping an eye on the Sundance movies and making her bets as to which one is going to be an Oscar winner next year. Good morning, Barbara.
Good morning, Rick.
Yeah, and Martha Mann Harrington, who is also a Park City attorney, but shows his movie acumen so well that a couple of months ago, when he was briefing the city council on some legal, on conflict of interest legislation or something, he was using the Oscar-winning movie Bridge of Spies to make a legal point to the city council.
I thought so, maybe Rick was going to say you broke out in song and dance.
Well, that too.
That's one thing I think I'll never be accused of. I've been asked to hum in church.
So yeah, but he uses his movie knowledge to also benefit the city and Libby Wadman, who this week the film she just reviewed, and I'm sure it's going to be up for some Oscar nominations next year. Fighting with My Family. I'm sure Dwayne Johnson's going to be up there for Best Supporting Actor.
So oh, I'm sure. Yeah. He really stretched his character there.
Yes.
He definitely was stretching that black shirt that he was wearing for all the photo ops, that's for sure.
Hey, you know.
did anybody get to any of the Sundance? That film was a kind of a surprise Sundance edition. Did anybody get to any of the screenings for that?
I did not. Did you, Libby?
No. Yeah, I didn't really realize until just recently that it had been that's what he was there for. I knew he was there, but I didn't know why.
Yes, but why would The Rock be at Sundance? Well, just to start off with, I'll throw it open to the panel here, but in terms of the results of the Oscars, and let's just talk about maybe the top five, you know, the actor winners and Best Picture. How did you folks do as far as predicting what would happen? Mark, you know, as far, you know, the actor winners and Best Picture, did you have... I don't know if anybody made you officially write down your predictions, but how did you do?
Well, I did pretty well. I think the big surprise wasn't that big of a surprise to me, because I think Green Book winning Best Picture had momentum coming in to the Oscar voting period, both with the industry and popular vote. And I think... that's what, and we were just talking about that before the panel started. I think people don't realize how industry-driven the Oscars still are, and it's really not about some artistic or even technical competency vote on Best Picture,
the movie we like,
or even the most popular movie, certainly in box office or by general sort of consensus. It's this weird conglomeration of things that have to align for a film to win, and I think Universal did the best, clearly, as from the result, did the best rollout, and they took a big gamble with a slow rollout. They were patient, and then they moved when they had the opportunity in December. It was the only nominated film screening during the voting period, except for Roma, which was available via Netflix. Those things pay off, and I think, you know, is it technically the best picture? I think we could spend an entire 2 hours and not even touch the surface of that argument. But it played the marketing and voting game the best, and you saw that result. Is that, and for better or for worse?
Yeah, and I think Mark, you and I talked at the time when after we had both seen it. I think you said. Was kind of a picture that you liked, but you felt guilty about liking it.
Yeah, and I think the team did the best with that. They were just honest. They think regardless of you know, the perception that this is a step backwards to a 1950s, you know, film that, and just the fact that it's against a James Baldwin script, essentially, with If Beale Street Could Talk, is when, because Baldwin was such a critic of these kind of films. He hated Sidney Poitier films. And that if you told him 50 years ago, he would, one of his stories would be up against this kind of a film, 8 years after Barack Obama, he would just tell you you were, and then another few years after Ronald Reagan, he'd look at you like you're from the moon. And but here it is, and I think the team was honest that this was a story about love, and they wanted to make, that was their point. It wasn't so much the historical relationship, because that has been shown to be not factual. And so I think they use that as a vehicle that played into still, you know, mainstream America wants to believe in this story and that the hope and love can overcome racism. And at its simplicity. Yeah.
Even if the black person is not Sidney Poitier. Yeah.
I mean, you know, I was in an Irish pub last week and during a break, and, you know, there's three things going on in Irish pubs. And, you know, there's Brexit, what's wrong with Irish rugby, and are the players too old, and what the hell is America cinema thinking? You know, and the fact that there's a higher acumen in a West Coast small-town pub about, you know, film criticism is just, is funny. But that's, the Oscars aren't what people say they are. It is, you know, we have this saying about embrace our contradictions. There is no better example of contradictions in America in terms of what Hollywood perceives itself as, what the why the public still watches the Oscars, and what the industry and marketing needs out of the Oscars. And at the same time, why we all love film is the reasons, I think, is embedded in the reasons why Green Book won. We want these aspirational, feel-good escapism things. And if that is still embedded in an overreaching white privilege that we want this film to succeed, that's still where we are, unfortunately. And but at the end of the day, it's a feel-good story.
Libby, in terms of the results, were you surprised, or did you yawn and say, yeah, I knew that was going to happen?
I'm not so sure I was surprised as I was disappointed, perhaps, in some cases where they did just basically what I figured they would do and went with the flow. I was surprised this time with Glenn Close. I have to say, I thought she would get it. Now, in all fairness, I did not see The Favorite, but I did see The Wife. And, you know, Glenn Close just always does an impeccable job. It's almost like, because they can't find fault with her, they won't give her the award, because they don't see a difference in her performances. But to me, that's because her performances are always at the top.
Yeah. Or they still think she's Meryl Streep in disguise. And no, why give Meryl another Oscar?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. So I was a little taken aback by that one. But then again, they did what they always do. I guess in my mind, the Oscars are less about talent and more about the business behind the scenes and who can make the biggest noise.
So of the actor and the pitcher, I mean, were there any that you at least agreed with, or do you would have rather given it to, well, Glenn Close is one example, but, you know, Regina King, Mahershala Ali, Rami Malek.
I think those were probably very well deserved. I know I'm probably going to rankle a lot of people out there, but
Rankle.
Here I go. I was always the rabble rouser. I'm very glad that Roma got recognized in the way it did. A lot of people say,
best director and,
yeah, it a lot of people would say yes, but it doesn't deserve to be in the Oscars because it's a Netflix movie. Well, Netflix may have produced it, but it was produced in the way a movie is produced. And yes, now it is on Netflix.
And that's going to happen a lot more often. Netflix was a big presence at Sundance this year.
Yeah, along with Amazon. Mm-hmm. And But that movie is absolutely stunning. I was totally speechless at the end of it. The imagery, the people in it, the young lady who had the lead role, coming out of nowhere with no background in theater or movies, and just knocking your socks off. And I'm very glad that people could see past the hang up with Netflix and give it its just due. That surprised me. I will say that surprised me, and I was very happy to be surprised that way.
Yeah, Mark, you were.
Well, I mean, I think the Oscars sprinkled the infield, right? They gave a little bit to everybody to show the shift of the voters' makeup that they did. And I think it's too hard to criticize the entire slate, particularly in Best Actor and Best Actresses in the supporting roles, because they almost made everybody happy. Spike Lee got his, you know.
But he was Beale unhappy Street, at the end.
If Beale Street Could Talk, Regina King, that was outstanding. I think that was an outstanding award. The Glenn, I feel differently about the Glenn Close thing. I'm not a big believer in the category of they deserve it now because of prior work. And I think Robert Redford, to his credit, when he was nominated for the boat movie,
All Is Lost.
All Is Lost. He said, you know, this isn't important to me. I didn't believe him at the time. I really thought he was just being, you know, the statesman saying, it's not going to be a big deal if I don't win. I actually believe it wasn't a big deal to him that he didn't win. And I think for her, if you compare her performance in that film, even against non-nominated roles like Keira Knightley and Colette or Emma Thompson in the Children Act, those were better performances in my mind and much more complete. And hers did resemble Redford's. You know, she has about 5 lines in that film, and her her presence and her non-speaking performance was amazing, but it wasn't her best performance.
Do you think it's a factor, Mark, that you know, the wife, in terms of other nominations, you know, it just didn't seem to be a strong film in terms of picking up other nominations?
No, I think that did hurt her, and I think that helped Olivia Colman because The Favorite, you know, again, they wanted to. The Favorite was such a compelling film, but it was a film people loved to hate as well because the people in it were just so awful. And so I think it was a much juicier role to play in that sense. And when you have a slate like this, I think the Academy will go towards that theater-like performance that Ms. Coleman pulled off so magnificently.
Yeah. And I have to agree with you that I would have much rather have seen Emma Thompson for The Children Act up there, or Keira Knightley for Colette. They both did stunning jobs, but they weren't there, and so I kind of felt that they had picked nominated Glenn Close because of her background and everything else. And so I thought that for sure they would give it to her. Like I said, I didn't see Olivia Colman in her performance. But I'm just surprised that they didn't sort of fall back on their old habits.
Yeah. And we're coming up on a break, but when we get right back, we're going to talk to Barbara Bratz on her. She's going to opine like crazy on what she thought of the winners. And I know from the last panel, we were both rooting for Sam Elliott.
I'm very sad about that.
Nothing to do with the Oscars. I just, you know, rooting for Sam because Sam is the king of the cable TV westerns, and you just wanted to see him get some recognition. So we're going to...
I'll wipe my tears and then talk about that later.
Yes, we're gonna get back to that in just a second after this timely message.
Dylan here from the Park City UPS stores, happy to support Minor Nation Report, High School Sports, and the Minor Details Show on KPCW. In business since 2004, the Park City UPS store offers pack and ship services to properly pack fragile and high-value items, including art, electronics, or china, at Kimball Junction and next to the movie theater on Park Avenue.
Wake up to the Marketplace Morning Report every weekday at 6:50 and 7:50 during the morning news with Leslie Thatcher. Brought to you in part by DeJoria Center at High Star Ranch and Esco Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electrical. That's Esco, ESCO.
easy listening for a Saturday morning when we're here with the Oscar panel. Yeah, Ferranti and Teicher with the theme from The Apartment. One wonderful film about love and office politics and guys in the front office sleeping around like shameless tomcats. But anyway, but that was 1960. But for 2019, Barbara, what'd you think of the results? Were there any of them you predicted?
I would definitely not have won any contest that I entered on my predictions, without a doubt. Although saying that, you know, I was pretty much okay with who won. It wasn't like I was really pulling for anybody except our Sam, you know, to get his due. But I have to go on record as saying I'm a real slacker because I have not seen Roma, and I know Libby loved it, and I'm looking forward to seeing it. So my perceptions of who won and didn't win are colored by the fact that I didn't see Roma. So I don't know whether I would be more upset about them not getting more awards. But the one that I think I'm maybe more confused with or disconcerted by is I did see The Favorite. I didn't see The Wife, so I can't speak for Glenn Close's performance. But in knowing the story and watching the film of The Favorite, I was surprised that it wasn't Rachel Weisz nominated for the lead character and perhaps Olivia Colman and Emma Stone for Best Supporting. Because to me, like in the story, Rachel Weisz's character has usurped the Queen's power and she's manipulating the court and she's dominating the story. I don't see why she wasn't nominated for Best Actress. And having said that, if Olivia Colman and Emma Stone were both supporting roles, I preferred Emma Stone over Olivia Colman. So that was the lone award that I would have really questioned. And maybe it goes back to some of what we're saying. But if you've seen The Favorite, why do you think Olivia Colman was in the leading role and not Rachel Weisz?
I think that was a hard decision, but I think Colman benefited from that because I think it was like a trifecta that they view. I think that played into distinguishing her from the other nominees is that I think the three of them together helped boost her.
Yeah,
chances.
That was really strong cast.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but I think, as I recall, both Emma Stone and Rachel Weisz were nominated for supporting.
Yeah.
Usually means that neither one, they split the votes.
Split the votes.
Yeah.
Ultimately, they really made, like Mark said, a great team. But I just was really surprised that Olivia won because I would have favored Rachel Weisz's performance over hers in the movie.
Yeah. And you know, the whole strategy of who gets nominated for what Oscar is sometimes you scratch your heads about that. It's like I was not too surprised by Mahershala Ali winning for supporting because it's interesting. Often, you know, people win Oscars twice, sometimes in consecutive years, sometimes separated by just a couple of years. So for him to win another Oscar.
Supporting last year or lead last year? Supporting?
Twice in 3 years.
He was supporting. And he won, I think it was like 3 years ago or something, he won for Moonlight, and it shows you how weird the definition of supporting. And Moonlight, he disappears after about a third of the movie. In Green Book, you could arguably say he's the co-leading character,
right? And that's another one where they call that a supporting.
Yeah. Uh-huh. It's like sometimes the supporting has one scene, sometimes it's like. Again, Ali or Tatum O'Neill or something, you know, and they're practically the co-star of the movie, but that you call them supporting.
And Viggo really got a lot of acclaims. I forget who it was that called him out from the stage that, you know, during that movie that they just said this wouldn't have happened without him And was that the director?
Yeah.
Anyway, he definitely got a lot of accolades for that. He's really a chameleon. He can take on so many just widely different roles.
Vito, best milkshake and pizza diet put into a performance of the year. But Christian Bale turning into Dick Cheney.
Wasn't that amazing? That was fun.
Well, that's the makeup artist.
Yeah, but still, that was really good.
The makeup and. When Bale was in this Sundance thing called The Machinist, where he was, looked like an Auschwitz inmate. He just was skin and bone. So his ability to go for a physical transformation is
because he gained what 40 pounds, 50 pounds.
Oh God, place. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But now, panel, help me out here. Who of you saw A Star Is Born? Everybody mm-hmm. except me raises their hands. Okay, that shows you.
I've only seen the last two. I only discovered there were actually four of them when I was doing research. Right. I've only seen the last two.
Right,
like some people, I won't mention names.
The star is bored and binging. But,
I think there's five plus the Simpsons episode.
Yes.
Just to be clear.
Yes. What do you guys think happened? Just it seemed like that was the one with Bid Mo behind it, that this was the one that was going to steam through to Best Picture, that there was so much praise for Bradley Cooper and Lady
Gaga.
It's
a musical.
That's it?
I think that's a lot of it. Musicals have been known to win the Best Picture, but it's very rare.
And when they do, they take it away from them and give it to another movie.
Yes, exactly. There you go. What is it? Action pictures, superhero pictures, fantasy, sci-fi, those will never win Best Picture. It's an unwritten rule.
Or rarely.
And musicals are in the rare category. Yeah. They might.
Once in a like American in Paris, or I'm thinking Gigi or something.
Where they're absolutely up against the wall have to do it against their better judgment. But I think that's a lot of it. It was a musical, because certainly that movie had so much going for it, and there was so much put into it by everybody who was involved in it that, I was at least gratified they got Best Song.
Yeah.
And that was well-deserved.
It was. And even the performances live that night, that was the only one that was at all moving. And yet I was very moved by the song from RBG when I watched RBG. But as much as I love Jennifer Hudson, I think she kind of killed it. But anyway.
Yeah, sometimes you can kill a song by it's just the wrong person to present the song at the Oscars or something.
I don't know what it was, or maybe it was the fact that it was out of context. She's just standing on a stage singing this, and you hadn't just watched this wonderful documentary. It just didn't have the same impact. Yeah. And yet, Shallow, every time I hear it,
And that'll lead us into the show. But Mark,
I agree. I think if you look back for me, the biggest comparison is to Walk the Line with Joaquin Phoenix and Reese Witherspoon. Similarly, she won a Best Supporting Oscars, I recall, but neither Joaquin nor the film did any more than that. And I think it in many respects, that's a much stronger and more authentic film.
Yeah.
Where this one, I think, also suffered from sort of obviously the remake end of it, and just sometimes things are so popular and the music can overwhelm the voters a little, where they I think you see the reaction back that says, they're just going to don't want to be part of that degree of groundswell. And the timing, again, the industry timing was a little off. They were a little early. And I think they, they made the right marketing choice, and that killed it from a financial perspective in terms of the timing. But in terms of the voting, I think they were a little early.
I'd agree with you, because I think I told you the other day that I thought what part of the problem for Star Is Born is they came out too early. And the excitement has all gone past.
just so. Peaking too soon.
Yeah.
I hate when that happens.
Just like, it's like and as in Oscars and politics. Well, the let's talk a little bit about the show itself, which I think there's a lot to talk about in terms of the show itself, because I don't know, they sort of had a change forced on them in that they sort of found themselves without a host. And I mean, how did and Libby's going, yes, get rid of it all. But in terms of the hostless Oscars, how do you think it went? Was it Barbara?
I think it went fine. It was fine with me. I think they made a wonderful choice to have Julia Roberts come out last. That was a great smile, just to say goodnight and get a Julia Roberts smile.
Demeanor.
Yeah, she's just one class act. But no, it didn't bother me at all. In fact, I think a few of the presenters or people who were up there maybe even carried it just a bit farther than they needed to, you know, with poking fun at that. It would have been fine just to have more class acts walk out there, give a nice introduction, and on with the show.
Mark?
I'm in the minority position. I don't think it carries the same entertainment value without the host, but I'm prejudiced. I still recall, you know, the old days of...
Well, if Billy Crystal would do it every year, then I'd change my mind.
And, you know, if you look at the presenters and like the political party convention speeches and think, oh, who's the up and comer? I'm like, okay, Trevor Noah. I'm nominating Trevor Noah for next year right off the bat. I think I don't think the host is the problem with the timing nor the lack of creativity in the presentation or the entertainment value. I think there's no one has the better opportunity to hit a home run and knock it out of the park and carry the Oscars as the host. But I think that hasn't been the problem with the format. I think the format has suffered for other reasons. And if we get to your bonus questions, I'll get into that.
Okay. Yeah.
I have something to say about that too.
Libby, the absolutist who would just do away with the whole
No. But, I was curious to see what was going to happen without a host, because I'm so used to watching it with a host. And yes, Billy Crystal, come on back. Trevor Noah, like that idea. But I didn't think it hurt any by not having the host. And I found it interesting. They only did it with one, and it was Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga going up to the stage, but nobody even announced them. They just went up. So it obviously that type of format is not necessary, you know, the host making sure everything's moving along is not necessary to make it move along. People just know when to do what they're supposed to do and they do it. They need to find a way. I know everybody wants their 15 nanoseconds of fame by having thank you said to them, but some of those speeches, it's like, oh, God, you know. And the rest of the show suffers because of that. And I really think if they just could get up there.
Well, you know, that was my tip. In today's age of technology, you know, for all the people who were nominated, if they had a pre-printed flash up on the screen.
Of all the people they want to thank.
And then what they
so
say,
much.
Yes, can
I
just
really
be a meaningful statement.
It. There you go, guys.
Yeah, that would be my
to the screen.
That's my suggestion.
And be done with it, because that's what ruins the show.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now you've stole my thunder. Let's just go to the bonus question.
Sorry.
Rick has asked us if we could make one change, what would it be? And I'd go one step further. I would mandate the substance of the speeches to exclude those industry referrals and acknowledgments. I think it has no part in the ceremony. It flies over 99.9% of your audience, doesn't even care.
Yeah, they're like in jokes.
And
you just preached to us how industry-driven
no, that's
this
the
thing
history
is.
You're right, and I'm not going to disagree with that, but there's a way, you're both right, on either modern technology or just segregate it and have an awards winners industry luncheon, and they can thank their agents and their people and all that, but there's no reason to do that. On, you know, at you know, on live national television.
You know, when you ask us that bonus question, Rick, yeah, I always think about being in a...
And we haven't shot March Thunder yet.
No.
I was talking about specific awards, but we'll get to that later.
Okay. No, I was just going to say, you know, having been in so many Sundance audiences, it always tickles me as we watch the credits. I mean, we're used to sitting now because we're festival trained. But, you know, the little applause... clouds that come up for design or caterer or, you know, whatever. And so that means something to those people
exactly.
who are in the business in the crowd where, you know, to us, not so much. But to them, it does mean
a lot.
Well,
the director of photography comes up and the entourage sitting, you know, three rows from the front. Oh, yeah.
Right.
But it seems like... Since they had to go without a host, I think it did work well that the bit star at the end, Julia, just sort of swept us out,
mm-hmm.
and the first awards were Tina Fey, Amy Poehler, and Maya Rudolph,
right.
and they came out and did kind of a bit of a monologue, and then gave the first award, and I'm a little surprised that you know that. That they didn't try to get Faye and Poehler as co-hosts who have done other award shows and done a good job, I believe. But it seems like somebody said, well, if we don't have a host, hell with it. Let's just monkey around with the whole damn formula. And they had things like you didn't see too many stars. We had pictures presented by a tennis player, Serena Williams.
Late Night Hoes.
Yeah, and Trevor Noah. And people came out that I said, who? and it did seem like there were people walking out to audition for host next year. And maybe Trevor Noah may get the... but they made changes like... the old tradition that each actor category was presented by the opposite sex from the previous year, for instance. But they kind of boiled that together, and only best actor was presented by they bunched them up and put. Put like Sam Rockwell and Frances McDormand together to present. I think it was Best Actress, and then the other two winners from last year to present Best Actor. So they kind of threw that together, so it wasn't just being hostless. There was a different feel to the whole, to a lot of it. And when we get back from our commercial break, I will throw that to the panel.
Hi, I'm Wendy Gorley, and here's why I love working at KPCW. I love that I get to spend my time working with people who are passionate about community, nonprofit work, and having fun. I love being in the mountains and the ability to have local news and information at my fingertips. Now you can get a major dose of KPCW love at our upcoming pledge drive on March 4th through the 8th and get that glowy, feel-good feeling that comes from supporting local, you-focused public radio.
This is Earl Foote with Nexus IT. Nexus IT Consultants proudly supports KPCW and other local nonprofit organizations since 1998. Nexus IT contributes off-lease computers and IT equipment to nonprofit organizations throughout communities in Utah. More information, 435-487-9099 or nexusitc.net.
In the heat of night. And You were making, in terms of how to organize the Oscars, and Libby, you were making a point about, you know, they had this whole kind of disastrous thing for that they, for a second, they wanted to give away like cinematography and editing and things during the commercial breaks.
Yeah, and I think that really is a slap in the face to have the Oscar program and then say, oh, and by the way, you guys, we're going to get you during the commercial break. I mean, you're either part of the Oscars or you aren't. What I do think could be done that might help is to do what they ended up doing with the Emmys, the TV awards, where they split it between daytime and nighttime shows so that you have two Emmy award shows. Why couldn't you do the same kind of thing with the Oscars, where you have the awards for the acting side and the awards for the technical side? Because certainly one isn't going to mean anything without the other.
I don't think that would appeal to a television audience. I mean, you could still have the award shows, but I don't think just awards for the technical parts of films would make any
presence. Maybe that doesn't need to
be. And maybe it doesn't matter.
TV presence. Mm-hmm. Because truly, how many people watching the Oscars across the world actually understand
what all about?
Any of those things are about? They might understand one or two, but I'm willing to bet that most people don't know.
You know, piggyback on what you just said, how about the commercials, the Walmart commercials? You know, we dress the
dressers.
Yeah, we dress the dressers. We dress the caterers. You know, we dress the grip boy, you know, whatever. So you learn a little bit more about some of those credits just through those creative Walmart commercials. I like those. I thought they were great.
Yeah. Mark, any reaction to the format changes?
No, I just think they still don't hit the nail on the head. They can go farther. They can take other cues from the Emmys in terms of just entertainment value. And I think just the logistics component, getting people on that stage and limiting how many people can get on stage or adding some drama and putting the next award group on stage so they're there with the presenters when they award. This is about pageantry and stardom, let's be honest, and people want to see that. And yeah, they can do that with camera cuts to the audience for the reaction of the loser as the winner's getting up and who's hugging who, but I think they could save so much time just by somehow changing that in addition to the speeches.
Yeah, somebody I get the feeling that news people are not running the Oscars. I think if our general manager Renee was in charge of the Oscars, she would have told a camera guy, okay, when they announce Best Picture, if it's not Spike, keep the camera on Spike.
Yep. Man,
let's see what he does. and there were some categories that I would have rather done during the commercial break, like the short films or something, you know?
Yeah, but I think it would be fairer to them to just have a whole separate thing, whether it's on TV or if it's a huge banquet or what. But to say, oh, we brought you here, but no, you don't get any airtime.
And they've done that with some of the technical section of the awards. I think there's, right?
There's a science that is given out ahead of time.
Yeah.
I think there are nicer ways of doing it. I think that really was lame on their part, saying, oh, yeah, you get it in the commercial. Yeah.
But I still miss the clip version. You know, there have been some productions that have really done a great job integrating either the nostalgia clip or clips. And that's an its own art on how to do that. And I think with today's media changes and the way – I think YouTube and other platforms have expanded your exposure to the behind the scene elements and the making of a scene. And the New York Times platform, for example, embedded in their arguments always has those little snapshots of, you know, and the director, you know, in addition to our review, here's a director cut of how they made this scene. That kind of stuff, I think, is fascinating. I'm not sure you could do that without adding time, but there's some more of that here and there, like the Emmys does with their display of all the, you know, the musical numbers and nominations and all that, I think would lend itself to a better, more entertaining show.
Yeah, yeah. What were the spontaneous kind of human moments that you liked? I deal with a lot of people that I think one highlight was Olivia Colman's acceptance, because she seemed to be
gobsmacked
and didn't expect it, and then she gushes about, you know, Glenn Close, and there's Lady Gaga, you know. I just beat her for best actress.
Well, and she was funny and British, and that's a good combination.
Yeah, she clearly went to the Nicole Kidman school of speech giving, and there is such a thing. Like, if you break down the speeches, there is a professionalism with about a third of them. Hmm. There is the, oh, you know, even though this is my most important career moment of my life, I didn't write anything down. You have a third that try that. That is ridiculous. And then you have the industry people that just list their agent, blah, 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 blah. And they have to do what they have to do. And that's usually the directors and some of the other. And that's just.
And then the occasional ones that are so drunk off their feet.
I'd like to thank Larry Blonfman, who believed in this picture when no one else did.
They should show. But those personal speeches, Regina King, I'd put in that category. Those are the ones that I think the public wants to hear, and hear that connection.
And the guy jumping up to help her on the steps.
That could be a rule. Women have to wear flats.
and I think we tied or set the record for grandma thanking in this presentation, you know? So I think, you know, those moments are what makes the connection between the audience and the performers. And I think, and that's why I mentioned, Nicole Kidman has always taken the time to come up to those awards in either make that connection and or give tribute to her crew in a very succinct, professional manner that I've always been impressed by, regardless of whether you think she's like pasty performer or not, you know, whatever.
Well, but, and Meryl Streep.
Meryl Streep is another example. She is always excellent. Mm.
Yeah. And Barbara, you know, your favorite human moments.
Well, I love the chemistry between Lady Gaga.
Oh,
and and Bradley Cooper. That just was. I could just watch them sing, and that was mine.
Yeah,
I have to vote for that one.
Yeah,
I was waiting to see that, to see if they could carry through. Mm-hmm. I wanted to know how well Bradley Cooper could actually sing, because he went through a whole lot to do that role in terms of
voice
lowering
coaching,
his voice an octave,
to try to be similar to Sam,
Everything. But there was such chemistry in that movie, and I was like, no, they couldn't possibly duplicate that.
They did.
But they did.
Oh, well, that's good.
Yeah, so that was a nice moment.
I'd say Spike Lee jumping on Samuel L. Jackson. That was kind of funny.
Yeah, and some of the offbeat, the planned but offbeat things, that was kind of...
Oh, the rabbits.
Melissa McCarthy's gown for the costume design.
Well, and who was presenting with her? I never did notice who was presenting, because I'm looking at his costume.
I forgot.
That was part of the thing where they had somebody with her, but it was nobody you remember. This was a no-star night.
It might have been somebody we should have remembered, but I was just trying to count the rabbits.
Blown away by the rabbits and the one she was manipulating.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting. For one award, they dropped Keegan Michael Key. They dropped him from the roof.
Yes, Mary Poppins.
Yes, that was supposed to. Speaking of the WWE, I hoped somebody told them about Owen Hart, and the wrestler who died after one of those stunts went wrong. So I presume that there was a high safety, you know.
He looked like he was very well harnessed.
Harnessed, yes. And it was, and sentimental level, it was kind of fun. Bohemian Rhapsody presented by Mike Myers and Dana Carvey.
Yeah,
looking older.
Don't we all?
They should have had on their
Garth. You grow older even in Wayne's World.
Yeah,
right?
Well, they should have had on their Garth and Wayne wigs to do that one. So in terms of, you know, do you think the Oscars on their last? It seems like they've had such a crisis of confidence the last few years. There was the Oscar So White, and everybody freaked out about that. And as Barbara pointed out, there was the thing where they flirted with the idea of giving up the popular movie award, and then this thing about no host, and then they tried to go to commercial.
It sounds like they're trying to reinvent themselves, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Well, and they may need to reinvent themselves.
That's okay.
I mean, the world
is not changing,
and just like the thing about Roma. You know, is it a movie? Is it not a movie? Can it have an Oscar? Can it not have an Oscar? And so, I mean, as our world is changing, I think the way in which we present the Oscars and probably has to change as well. I think things will always stay the same in terms of having to have the red carpet and, you know, that kind of thing. But I think other parts of it are going to have to adjust.
Yeah. I mean, Mark, I mean, what are they saying about this down at the Irish pub?
It's all rubbish. It's all rubbish. I think it depends. I think the Oscars have to decide what they want to be in their next evolution. And I think broadening the participation was an obviously long overdue first step. But I don't think that can be the end goal. And I think if it really is to help facilitate a studio/industry-driven model and regenerate interest in films that, have to get a second play, if you will, at post-Oscars and through the new market of globalism and video on demand, is where does it fit in all that? Or is it going to be a more technical sort of artistic acknowledgement for artists? And I think you're seeing a little bit of identity crisis in this award slate, and in a good way. I think it was much more representative of the people watching and making films as a whole, and so I think it accomplished that. But for every step forward, there's a step back, and they'll have to see whether they want to either add new criteria or change the way the voting. And because there are technical components here that we're not privy to and can't really talk about. But the way Best Picture is voted for in terms of the 1 through 8 slate also impacts that result. And there are things they can change in that that could perhaps align expectations with both audience and artists with an outcome. But it's trying to serve many masters right now.
Yeah. And Roger Ebert reportedly proposed, that for the Oscars that they would disclose what the vote totals were, which probably will never happen, but it would be fun to see, because I suspect, like, say, Green Book, for instance, you might have seen that it won because there was a split vote between Black Panther and Black Klansman, for instance. And for the dead people segment, I still wish they would turn back the audience, applause. Because they turned they thought it was tasteless to have the applause-o-meter. The Burt Reynolds, yay, and some film editor, nothing.
Yeah.
Our time is running out here, so I want to get to the point, the segment where we give you godlike powers. And this is, for the Bruce Almighty, this is Barbara Almighty, Mark Almighty, and Libby Almighty. And this is, your godlike power is that you can go back to into the Oscar history and change any award winner that you would like to. You can go back to 1927 if you like, and say, but give the Oscar that's deserved to the performer instead of maybe the per, the winner who actually won. So we'll start. Barbara's all set. So
she's jumping at the bit.
Well, yeah. And you know, I'm not so sure I'm going to use my godlike power to change. I'm just going to use my godlike power to proclaim. And so when Rick gave us that assignment, I looked up some things and I found a list of 15 films that someone thought should have been at least named or won an Oscar. And I'm going to pick 1959 as my example because these two films were not even nominated. One is Some Like It Hot, and the other is North by Northwest. Uh-huh. Neither one of those films were even nominated, but here are the ones that were nominated. The Defiant Ones, Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, Anti-Mame, Separate Tables, which I don't know, and Gigi. And do you know the winner?
It was Gigi.
The winner was Gigi.
Yeah.
But what a strong category. And Some Like It Hot and North by Northwest weren't even nominated. Okay, I pass.
Okay.
Mine is more technical and goes from our prior conversation. I chose 2002 in the film editing category. I would have awarded The City of God over Lord of the Rings, Return of the King. Hmm. And it's intentional to reflect change, I'd suggest, technically from awards. And I think when you say what can they do differently in the voting and whatnot, in that year, City of God did win in the British BAFTA Awards. Hmm. Because they invert it. They do it the opposite the way the Oscars. They have a general voting for the nominees and have the technical groups vote on the award winner. Hmm. Oscars does it just opposite. They have the technical groups vote on the nominees and then the general membership votes on the winner. And I think if you look back at some of those categories, that's an example of one that should have gone the other way, in my view.
Okay, and Libby, you were going to invent an entirely new award?
Yeah, well, it's not entirely new because they did it once before, at least with Charlie Chaplin. But it would be an award for someone who shows the most capability, versatility across the board. So Charlie Chaplin won an honorary award very early on in the Oscars because they didn't know what to give him. He had done so much, so he got an honorary award for this. This year, I would have picked Bradley Cooper as the person who would have won it. That man wrote songs, he directed, he acted, he screenwrote.
He sang.
He sang. He did everything, which is why I was a little burned with Rami Malek, because Rami Malek did a great job, but he didn't even sing his own songs. Mm. So, and he didn't do any of the rest of it. So that's
the versatility award.
And don't underestimate the power of Queen.
Yes.
The power. I also heard that in an Irish pub.
Okay, and my choice. There's so many choices, but I'll take for 1997 supporting actress went to Kim Basinger for L.A. Confidential, and L.A. Confidential was an impressive movie, but for supporting, I would give it to Gloria Stewart, Old Rose from Titanic. She did a great job, and sentimental factor that to Gloria, whose career went back to the early 1930s and had a wonderful comeback, and I think a great old Hollywood story. I guess I'm showing my Turner Classic Movies roots.
That's all right.
I would give her the award, and we are. And we're gonna sink down below the waves until May or June. We'll do a summer panel. So very much thank you to Barbara Bretz, Mark Harrington, and Libby Wadman. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
And this
Thanks.
is KPCW Park City.